Well, thank you, Mr. Marker. And greetings to everyone here. Looks like, I was going to say that a few people are gone, but they're actually it's pretty close to normal in count, it looks like. So greetings to all of you and anyone listening online. If we have any visitors, I see a few. Welcome to you too. Hope you enjoy your visit here. And this, of course, Thanksgiving weekend is a common time for family gatherings, family observances. And with that in mind, the message today is about a special relationship between a father and his son. And that's the title of the message, Father and Son. But it's probably not the father and the son that might immediately come to your mind. It could be, in fact, considered a message on child rearing. Now you may wonder, child rearing, who would I go to get advice about child rearing? Well, obviously I'd go to a guy who's never been married and never has kids, because his advice would not be tainted by anything personal. Or you may think, well, child rearing, it's too late for that. They're not around any longer, they're on their own. So my knowledge is completely untainted by personal experience. The only experience I have had directly is that I was a child once, and we can all claim that. So I'm obviously not going to focus on learned advice, things I've learned from raising children or any other personal experience, but I'll be talking about this particular father-son relationship that's described in the Bible. It's one that wasn't so successful, and it's the relationship between David and his son Absalom. If you look at 2 Samuel 19:4, you don't need to turn there. You're familiar with it. One of the most memorable laments in the Bible is in that verse, 2 Samuel 19:4, where it says, "But the king covered his face, and the king cried out with a loud voice, 'Oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son.'" David is grieving over the death of his son. This is his lament. Well, what happened? What caused this? What brought it all up? What went wrong? And what could have been changed or prevented? What can we learn by going back over the events that led up to this? So in this message, we'll look at part of the lives of Absalom and David, look at some of the decisions that were made at the time and the resulting consequences that were suffered because of those decisions. 2 Samuel 3, verses 1 through 5, talks about the birth of Absalom. 2 Samuel 3, 1 through 5. "Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, but David grew stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul grew weaker and weaker." Then it talks about sons of David, his first sons. In verse 2, sons were born to David in Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon by Ahinoam the Jezreelitess. His second, Chileab by Abigail, the widow of Nabal the Carmelite. The third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Tamal, king of Geshur. The fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith. The fifth, Shephaniah, the son of Abital. And the sixth, Ithream, by David's wife, Eglah. These were born to David in Hebron. Now, did you pick up on that? Six sons, six different mothers. So, in fact, these were all, in effect, stepbrothers, stepsisters. But David didn't stop there. He had more children after that. We read in chapter 5 of 2 Samuel that David had 11 more children, and again from various wives and concubines. 2 Samuel 5, verse 13, if you want to turn there, we'll be spending, as I said, most of the time in 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel 5:13 says, "And David took more concubines and wives from Jerusalem after he had come from Hebron. Also more sons and daughters were born to David. Now these are the names of those who were born to him in Jerusalem." And it lists the names: Shammua, Shoba, Nathan, Solomon, Ithbar, Elisha, and so on. Most of them are names that we don't hear anything about other than Solomon. Then the parallel passage in 1 Chronicles gives a slightly different listing of names, but still indicates that Absalom was the third son, born of Maacah, and the first six sons had six different mothers. So regardless of these succeeding sons and daughters, the first six had six different mothers. 1 Chronicles 3, verses 1 through 4, gives a slightly different order, as I just mentioned. It said, but still it says, the third was Absalom, the son of Maacah, daughter of Talmah, king of Geshur. So both accounts agree that Absalom was the third son. The Bible lists 13 more sons born in Jerusalem, and he also had a daughter, Tamar. At least that's the only daughter that was mentioned. It's the only one that is further mentioned in the Bible. In 1 Chronicles 3:1, I just read those, the sons and daughters that were born after that. Now, what happened? Let's start into what happened after that. After these children were born, after they presumably had left home, we find that David is allied with the Philistines in a war. And this is covered in 1 Samuel 27. If you'd like to turn there, we'll read a number of the first verses of 1 Samuel 27. Verse 1, "And David said in his heart, now I shall perish someday by the hand of Saul." So David and Saul were at odds with one another. "There's nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape to the land of the Philistines, and Saul will despair of me to seek me any more in any part of Israel. So I shall escape out of his hand." So he and Saul were at odds with each other, so David decides, well, I've got to get away from him, and he left. Verse 2, "Then David arose and went over with the 600 men who were with him to Achish, the son of Maacah, king of Gath. So David dwelt with Achish at Gath, he and his men, each man with his household, and David with his two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail the Carmelitess." Apparently, his other wives didn't go with him, or maybe they weren't living at this time, but just these two were with him at that time. Abigail was Nabal's widow. "And it was told Saul that David had fled to Gath, so he sought him no more. Then David said to Achish, if I have now found favor in your eyes, let them give me a place in some town in the country that I may dwell there. So Achish gave him Ziklag that day. Therefore Ziklag has belonged to the kings of Judah to this day. Now the time that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was 1 full year and 4 months. Verse 12, it talks about David and his men went up and raided the Geshurites, the Girzites, and so on, the Amalekites. For those nations were the inhabitants of the land from of old, as you go to Shur. Whenever David attacked the land, verse 9, he left neither man nor woman alive, but took away the sheep, the oxen, the donkeys, the camels, and the apparel, and returned and came to Achish. So he completely destroyed any place that he conquered. Then Achish would say in verse 10, where have you made a raid today? It's almost as if, well, you've been out on daily raids pretty much, so where'd you go today? What country did you devastate? And David would say, against the southern area of Judah, or against the southern area of the Jerashmeelites, or against the southern area of the Kenites. David would save neither man nor woman alive to bring news to Gath, saying, lest they should inform on us, saying, thus David did. So he was afraid that if he didn't kill everybody, they would come back and be after him. And thus was his behavior all the time he dwelt in the country of the Philistines. So Achish believed David, saying, he has made his people Israel utterly abhor him. Therefore, he will be my servant forever. So he has lots of enemies. Now, I mentioned I'm going to talk about points where decisions were made that if these decisions had been made differently, things would have worked out possibly better. The first decision point is what I've just covered, that David had many wives and many children from different mothers, and these children weren't necessarily allied with each other. David had left Jerusalem and sided with the Philistines, and only God prevented him from going against his own people. He raided the Geshurites at this point, and that may have been where he acquired his wife Maacah. And that wasn't a wise move, because that may have been some latent hostility between David and the Geshurites. Now, we have a description of Absalom in 2 Samuel 14. And the main thing it seems like they talk about is his good looks, how good looking he was. And he had good hair. It says, now in all Israel there was no one who was praised as much as Absalom, reading in 2 Samuel 14, 25. There was no one praised as much as Absalom for his good looks. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. And when he cut the hair of his head, at the end of every year he cut it, not necessarily just because it needed it, but it says he cut it because it was heavy on him. When he cut it, he weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels, according to the king's standard. Now, it talks about how much this hair weighed. I looked at a commentary by R.D. Bergen called the New American Commentary, and he talks about Absalom. He says that in addition to being handsome, Absalom was a hairy man. In fact, when Absalom would cut his hair from time to time, its weight was 200 shekels by the royal standard, which comes out to slightly more than 5 pounds, assuming the weight of a shekel to be 11.5 grams. Now, 5 pounds, if I had to carry around a 5-pound bag of sugar or flour or whatever or anything, a brick on my head, that would weigh me down, and I would want to get rid of it. So that's the reason why he cut his hair. Now, he had a beautiful sister, Tamar. That's also described in 13:1, and I mentioned her name earlier. But continuing in this R.D. Bergen commentary, he says, like Esau, Absalom was a masculine, hairy son who was favored by his father. It seems we've seen that before, where siblings are favored by opposite parents. Like Esau, or Absalom, sacrificed his birthright through foolish actions at a meal, and ultimately caused much grief for his father. Now, certainly the writer's emphasis on Absalom's hair would also have called to mind the tragic story of Samson. And we remember Samson, he had the long hair, and that eventually was the cause of his death in a way. Continuing in the commentary, the narrator criticizes Absalom subtly by clarifying the reason for his haircut. He would cut his hair when it became too heavy for him. The Torah provided 2 primary reasons for a man to cut his hair. One was to give the hair to God following the successful completion of a Nazirite vow, and the other was to enter into a state of ceremonial cleanness before the Lord. So according to the Torah, that's a reason to cut your hair. It doesn't mention any other reason. And it doesn't indicate that Absalom had any indication or any idea of dedicating his hair. Now, this detachment of Absalom's act from any religious motivation underscores the profane nature of the man's life and reinforces the intimation that his life would end disastrously. The commentary is saying that because he did this to his hair and not for the right reasons, that his life was going to end badly. And interestingly, we'll find out that his hair would play a significant role in that disastrous end. A genealogical note in the text says that Absalom fathered three sons and a daughter. And this also helps us understand and evaluate Absalom's life. Now, three of the sons would have been reckoned as a great blessing. But by the time of Absalom's death, all of them would be dead, so that Absalom had no male heir to continue his family life. So of all of Absalom's children, his sons were all killed off. The Torah declared that disobedience to the Lord would cause one's children to be cursed. It says that in Deuteronomy 28:18, and the narrator's indication that Absalom lost all three male heirs so early in life would reinforce the notion that he was indeed under the Lord's curse. So there are a number of underlying factors in this relationship between Absalom and David. How much does hair actually weigh? Is that 5 pounds? Is that a close estimate? Well, there's a trivia site. It was, if you remember the animated movie Tangled, talked about Rapunzel being in the castle, and she's the one that let her hair down so that her lover, whoever that was, could climb up the hair. Well, animators have said that Rapunzel's hair would have been approximately 70 feet. 70 feet of hair. And would consist of about 100,000 strands. And that yields, talks about numbers in micrograms and milligrams and grams and kilograms. And they say, well, that would have been approximately 10 pounds of hair. So the weight of 5 pounds doesn't seem out of line if you consider this. Well, the next decision point, Amnon gets bad advice from Jonadab. This is in 2 Samuel 13:1. Jonadab is a cousin of his. He's a very shrewd and crafty man, kind of out for his own good, it seems. 2 Samuel 13:1 says, after this, Absalom, the son of David, had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Amnon, I believe, was the third son. Now, Amnon was so distressed over his sister Tamar that he became sick, for she was a virgin. He was in love with his sister, or his half-sister. And it was improper for Amnon to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. Now, Jonadab was a very crafty man, and he said to him, why are you, the king's son, becoming thinner day after day? Will you not tell me? So this was, this love that Absalom was feeling was affecting him. He wasn't eating right. And Amnon says to him, I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister. Now, the Bible warns us about getting advice from friends, and I think this is a case of that, because friends may tell us what they think we want to hear. You might make a note of Proverbs 12:26, which says, the righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. And that's what's going to happen here, as we'll see. Was there anything else going on between these two half-brothers? Amnon was the oldest and presumably first in line for the throne. Absalom was the third in line, or maybe the second, if the second son was no longer alive. It doesn't mention. And he appears to have been favored more for that position. So there was rivalry, distrust, and hatred between Amnon and Absalom. So Jonadab, 2 Samuel 13, verse 11, he advised a ruse for Amnon to be alone with Tamar. 2 Samuel 13, 11, now when she had brought them to him to eat, he took hold of her and said to her, "Come, lie with me, my sister." But she answered him, "No, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing should be done in Israel. Do not do this disgraceful thing, and where could I take my shame? And as for you, you would be like one of the fools in Israel. Now therefore, please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you." So there was this type of incest going on between Absalom and Tamar. And what she is saying to him, that you can't have me, but if you talk to the king, King David, he won't withhold me from you. If you get his permission, then that's fine. Then we can be together. But verse 14, however, he would not heed her voice, and being stronger than she, he forced her and lay with her. So he used this ruse to be alone with her. And apparently, even with the same father but different mothers, they could have wed legally. But we find that he despises her afterwards. In verse 15, 2 Samuel 13, 15, then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he had loved her. And Amnon said to her, "Arise, be gone." So she said to him, "No, indeed, this evil of sending me away is worse than the other you did to me." But he wouldn't listen to her. So if she had gone, there was no place she could go, and no man would have her. So the next decision point, that decision point was regarding Amnon and Tamar, the way they went about it, that he didn't seek permission like he should have and could have. The fourth one, what does David do about this? 2 Samuel 13, 19. Should David care? Well, certainly he should. These were his sons and his daughter that were involved. But he expresses outrage, but doesn't do anything. Verse 19 of 2 Samuel 13. Then Tamar put ashes on her head and tore her robe in many colors that was on her, laid her hand on her head and went away crying bitterly. And Absalom, her brother, said to her, "Has Amnon, your brother, been with you? But now hold your peace, my sister. He is your brother. Do not take this thing to heart." So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. But when King David heard of all these things, he was very angry. And Absalom spoke to his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. In the McGee commentary through the Bible, he describes it in this paragraph, describes what was going on. He says that David is angry about what happened, but does nothing about it. David was like many other men in Scripture. He was an indulgent father who raised a bunch of kids who were bad. And we've seen that before. We'll see it again further on in the Bible. That's happened again and again. It started with old Eli, God's high priest. His sons were not only immoral, they were godless and had a religious racket going. You might remember that about what his sons were doing in the temple. Then we come to Samuel. Since he was raised in the same atmosphere as Eli's sons, you would think Samuel would be more of a disciplinarian, that he would have maintained some authority and control over his sons. But his sons turned out to be corrupt and dishonest. Next we come to David. David knew Samuel, and he knew Samuel's sons. You would think he would have been more strict with his children, but he was not. He too was an indulgent father. He was angry about what Amnon did to his sister Tamar. But after all, what kind of an example has David set for his boys? And this commentary ends this paragraph by saying, the chickens are beginning to come home to roost. And I think we know what that expression means. Next decision point, number five. David allows Amnon to go with Absalom, these two brothers who were not on the best of terms. Verse 23 of 2 Samuel 13. And it came to pass, after two full years, that Absalom had sheep shears in Baal Hazor, which is near Ephraim. So Absalom invited all the king's sons. Then Absalom came to the king and said, kindly note your servant has sheep shears. Please let the king and his servants go with your servant. But the king said to Absalom, no, my son, let us not all go now, lest we be a burden to you. Then he urged him, Absalom urged the king, but he would not go, and he blessed him. Then Absalom said, if you weren't going to let all the sons go, please let my brother Amnon go with us. Now, wouldn't this ring some kind of alarm bell with David? It should have, because David knew what had passed with Absalom and Amnon. And the king said to him, why should he go with you? But Absalom urged him, so he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. Did David even pay enough attention to his sons to know about the hatred that was going on? Had he completely forgotten about Tamar? It seems that way. Decision point six. This is at 2 Samuel 13, 28. Absalom has Amnon killed. 2 Samuel 13, 28. Now Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, watch now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, then kill him. Do not be afraid. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and valiant. So the servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and each one got on his mule and fled. All the other sons knew that Absalom would come for them next, so they all left. In 2 Samuel 13, verse 30, we hear what David is told about this. And it came to pass while they were on the way that news came to David saying, Absalom has killed all the king's sons. Not one of them is left. So the king arose and tore his garments and lay on the ground, and all his servants stood by with their clothes torn. Then Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, answered and said, let not my lord suppose they have killed all the young men. Now these weren't all his sons who were coming back yet. These were the servants that were bringing news of them. Let not my lord suppose they have killed all the young men, the king's sons, for only Amnon is dead. For by the command of Absalom, this has been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. This has been brewing and brooding up for a long time, ever since this incident between Amnon and Tamar. Verse 33, now therefore let not my heart the king take the thing to his heart to think that all the king's sons are dead, for only Amnon is dead. I think for anyone to be dead is very little consolation. The next decision point, Absalom flees and he spends 3 years in Geshur. This is in verse 34. Then Absalom fled. He knew his life was probably a little precarious by then. And the young man who was keeping watch lifted his eyes and looked, and there many people were coming from the road on the hillside behind him. And Jonadab said to the king, "Look, the king's sons are coming, as your servant said, so it is." So it was, as soon as he had finished speaking, that the king's sons indeed came. And they lifted up their voice and wept. Also the king and all his servants wept very bitterly. They wept because Amnon was not with them. He had been killed. The next decision point, what happened next? Well, David longs to see Absalom. In verse 37, still in 2 Samuel 13, but Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, the king of Geshur, and David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. King David longed to go to Absalom, for he had been comforted concerning Amnon because he was dead. He had already accepted that news, and he had mourned his son Amnon, but he still loved Absalom. Absalom was still his son, and he mourned him. Now David allows Absalom to return. This is the next thing that was a little strange. He allowed Absalom to return, but he refused to see him. 2 Samuel 14:21. His introduction to it, Joab sees that David misses Absalom and arranges for the wise woman from Tekoa to persuade David to bring him back. And the king said to Joab, "All right, I have granted this thing. Go therefore, bring back the young man Absalom." Then Joab fell to the ground on his face and bowed himself and thanked the king. And Joab said, "Today your servant knows that I have found favor in your sight, my lord, O king, in that the king has fulfilled the request of his servant." So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. Now you think the king would welcome him with open arms, but verse 24, and the king said, "Let him return to his own house, but do not let him see my face." So Absalom returned to his own house, but did not see the king's face. What is a strange way to treat your son, especially after yearning to see him. And this continues for 2 full years. Verse 28, and Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem, but did not see the king's face. David still wouldn't speak to him. So David finally allows Absalom to come to him, because Absalom uses kind of an extreme trick or whatever to get David's attention. Starting in verse 29 of 2 Samuel 14, therefore Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but he would not come to him. Absalom still wants to see David. When he sent again the second time, he would not come. So he said to his servants, "See, Joab's field is near mine, and he has barley there. Go and set it on fire." And Absalom's servants set the field on fire, just to get his attention. Then Joab arose and came to Absalom's house and said to him, "Why have your servants set my field on fire?" And Absalom answered Joab, "Look, I sent you saying, 'Come here, so that I may send you to the king,' to say, 'Why have I come from Geshur? It would be better for me to be still there. Now, therefore, let me see the king's face. But if there is iniquity in me, let him execute me.'" So this was Absalom's thought. Well, just let me see him. If he wants to kill me, so be it. Just let me see him. So Joab went to the king and told him. And when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king. Then the king kissed Absalom. The next decision point. Now Absalom is back where he wants to be, but he's not doing what David would want him to do or what others think he should do. 2 Samuel 15, verses 1 through 6. After this had happened, that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. So he was becoming a man of means. He could afford to do this. Now Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way to the gate. So it was, whenever anyone who had a lawsuit came to the king for a decision, that Absalom would call to him and say, "What city are you from?" And he would say, "Your servant is from such and such a tribe of Israel." Then Absalom would say to him, "Look, your case is good and right, but there's no deputy of the king to hear you." And moreover, it says, Absalom would say, "Oh, that I were made judge in the land, and everyone who has any suit or cause would come to me. Then I would give him justice." And so it was, whenever anyone came near to bow down to him, he would put out his hand and take him and kiss him. In this manner, Absalom acted toward all Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. So he was doing this. He's saying, "Well, you're not going to get anything from the king, but if only I were in his place, I could do something about it. I have people, and we would definitely hear you and hear your cause." Verse 7, what happens then? Now it came to pass, after, your Bible might say 40 years, the New King James and others say 40, but actually most of the other translations agree that it should be 4 years. And 40 years really wouldn't make sense for him to be there that long. So we'll say it came to pass after 4 years that Absalom said to the king, "Please let me go to Hebron and pay the vow which I made to the Lord. For your servant took a vow while I dwelt at Geshur in Syria, saying, 'If the Lord indeed brings me back to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord.' And the king said to him, 'Go in peace.' So he arose and went to Hebron." Then, verse 10, Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, 'Absalom reigns in Hebron.'" So he's got his uprising all planned throughout all the tribes. "And with Absalom went 200 men invited from Jerusalem, and they went along innocently and did not know anything. Then Absalom sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, from Giloh, while he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy grew strong, for the people with Absalom continually increased in number." The next decision point, David flees. This is covered in 2 Samuel 15:30. "So David went up by the ascent of the Mount of Olives and wept as he went up, and he had his head covered and went barefoot, and all the people who were with him covered their heads and went up weeping as they went up. And someone told David, saying, 'Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom.'" Ahithophel is David's counselor. David said, "O Lord, I pray, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." Then Absalom said to Ahithophel, "Give advice as to what we should do." And Ahithophel said to Absalom, "Go into your father's concubines, whom he has left to keep the house, and all Israel will hear that you were abhorred by your father. Then the hands of all who are with you will be strong." So they pitched a tent for Absalom on the top of the house. Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. Now the advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was as if one had inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the advice of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. So he was giving him the right advice for that situation. Now, Ahithophel wants to attack David at once, but 2 Samuel 17, verse 1, "Moreover, Ahithophel said to Absalom, 'Now let me choose 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue David tonight. I will come upon him while he is weary and weak and make him afraid, and all the people who are with him will flee, and I will strike only the king. Then I will bring back all the people to you. When all return except the man whom you seek, all the people will be at peace. And the saying pleased Absalom and all the elders of Israel. But this wasn't really good advice. Verse 5, 2 Samuel 17. Then Absalom said, "Now call Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear what he says too." When Hushai came to Absalom, Absalom spoke to him, saying, "Ahithophel has spoken in this matter. Shall we do as he says? If not, speak up." So Hushai said to Absalom, "The advice that Ahithophel has given is not good at this time." So ordinarily Ahithophel was a very wise person and would give the right advice, but this Hushai is saying that this is not the good advice at this time. "For," said Hushai, "you know that your father and his men, that they are mighty men. They are enraged in their minds like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. Your father is a man of war and will not camp with his people. Surely by now he is hidden in some pit or in some other place." So he's saying that, the king has his men scattered all over and they're going to be ready to jump. Excuse me. "And even he who is valiant," verse 10, "whose heart is like the heart of a lion, will melt completely. For all Israel knows that your father is a mighty man, and those who are with him are valiant men. Therefore, I advise that all Israel be fully gathered to you from Dan to Beersheba, like the sand that is by the sea for multitude, and that you go to battle in person. So we will come upon him in some place where he may be found, and we will fall on him as the dew falls on the ground. And if him and all the men who are with him, there shall not be left so much as one. Moreover, if he is withdrawn into a city, then all Israel shall bring ropes to that city, and we will pull it into the river until there's not one small stone found there." Verse 14, "So Absalom and all the men of Israel say, 'The advice of Hushai the Archite is better than the advice of Ahithophel.' For the Lord had purposed to defeat the good advice of Ahithophel," who actually had been right all along, "to the intent that the Lord might bring disaster on Absalom. But God has other plans." The next decision point, Absalom attacks. 2 Samuel 18:6. He's following this bad advice to attack. 2 Samuel 18, verse 6, "So the people went out of the field of battle against Israel, and the battle was in the woods of Ephraim. The people of Israel were overthrown there before the servants of David, and a great slaughter of 20,000 took place that day. For the battle there was scattered over the face of the whole countryside, and the woods devoured more people that day than the sword devoured." Verse 9, "Then Absalom met the servants of David. Absalom rode on a mule. The mule went under the thick boughs of a great terebinth tree, and his head caught in the terebinth." Remember all his hair that he still had. "So he was left hanging between heaven and earth, and the mule which was under him went on." So the mule didn't care. Hey, this load was off his back. He just kept on going, left Absalom hanging. "Now a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, 'I just saw Absalom hanging in a terebinth tree.'" 2 Samuel 18:14. The next decision point, Joab and his men kill Absalom. "Then Joab said, 'I cannot linger with you.' And he took three spears in his hand and thrust them through Absalom's heart while he was still alive in the midst of the terebinth tree. And 10 young men who bore Joab's armor surrounded Absalom and struck and killed him. So Joab blew the trumpet and the people returned from pursuing Israel, for Joab held back the people. And they took Absalom and cast him into a large pit in the woods, laid a very large heap of stones over him. Then all Israel fled, everyone to his tent." Now Absalom, In his lifetime, had taken and set up a pillar for himself, which is in the King's Valley. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. He called the pillar after his own name, and to this day is called Absalom's Monument. And then this brings us back to the starting point. 2 Samuel 18:33. Despite everything, David mourns Absalom's death. 2 Samuel 18:33. Then the king was deeply moved, and he went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said thus, Oh, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place. Oh, Absalom, my son. And Joab was told, Behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. So the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people. For the people heard it said that day, The king is grieved for his son. And the people stole back into the city that day, as people who are ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. They had all of these mighty thoughts in mind that they were going to kill all the king's men, but they slink back, more or less. They steal away, it says. But the king covered his face, and the king cried out with a loud voice, Oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son. Now, there's no way to know what the outcome would have been if it hadn't turned out this way. Absalom had what it took to be a leader. He had the favor of the people, and possibly he would have been the next king if he and David had worked together. And if that had happened, the nation would have been stronger and united. But the biggest decision point of all happened earlier because of something that was prophesied, and this was that David was cursed because of his affair with Bathsheba. It had to happen because God told him it would. And this is in 2 Samuel 12:7. This is Nathan telling David what's going to happen to him. Nathan said to David, You are the man. Thus says the Lord God of Israel, I anointed you king over Israel. I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave you your master's house and your master's wives into your keeping, and gave you the house of Israel and Judah. And if that had been too little, I would have given you much more. Why have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? You have killed Uriah the Hittite. This is right after Uriah had been killed. You've killed Uriah the Hittite with a sword. You have taken his wife to be your wife, and have killed him with the sword of the people of Ammon. Now therefore, the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me, and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. Thus says the Lord, Behold, I will raise up adversity against you from your own house, and I will take your wives before your eyes, and give them to your neighbor, and he shall lie with your wives in the sight of this son, for you did it secretly. But I will do this thing before all Israel, before the sun. There was no way David could avoid this because it was foretold. It was going to happen. It had to happen this way. So what were all these decision points I mentioned? Well, I mentioned 18 of them. I don't know if you're counting, and it doesn't matter if you were or not, but one was, there were many wives and many children from different mothers. We have Amnon getting bad advice from Jonadab about to do regarding the affair with his sister. Then Amnon and Tamar, the affair between them. Next one, David didn't do anything about it. Then David allowed Amnon to go with Absalom, even though it was highly likely that Amnon would be killed. And that's the next one. Absalom has Amnon killed. The next one, Absalom flees. He spends 3 years in Geshur. David longs to see him, but doesn't do anything about it. David allows Absalom to return, but he won't see him. David doesn't speak to Absalom. And finally, David allows Absalom to come to him. But in the meantime, Absalom seeks the favor of the public, tries to gather his own following. Absalom goes to Hebron and gathers troops. David flees and prays for bad counsel from Absalom, for Absalom. The next one, Absalom follows the bad advice of David's friends Hushai. Absalom attacks. Joab and his men kill Absalom. And the last one, despite all, David mourns Absalom's death. He grieved over it. But the big one was David and Bathsheba. This all happened because it had to happen. Now, what about David? Well, he came through it in a way. His lament showed his true love for his son. Absalom could hardly have committed a greater sin toward his father, but David's love for him was stronger than Absalom's sins. Now imagine if he could have acted on that love and built on it. Now there are several general points we can conclude from all this, and I mentioned in a way this is a childbearing message. There are some very general points. One is pay attention to your children. Second one, listen to them. Know their concerns. Know what's on their mind. The third one, correct them when they're wrong. Fourth one, praise them when it's deserved. And most importantly, let them know that you love them. David suffered. He mourned. It was one of many trials he endured in his lifetime. And like David, like Absalom, we'll all go through trials, hopefully not to the extent that they did, but we'll all make wrong decisions and bad decisions, and we'll suffer the consequences of them. David was a very imperfect father, but we have a perfect Father in heaven who sees our mistakes, and it's important that we always remember that. Our perfect Father sees our mistakes, and he greatly wants us to come to him for advice and for correction and forgiveness. And through it all, his love will be there for us and our families to the end.